Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh,
no, how would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Hello and welcome back to The Ruck, and here we are on Boxing Day, where in traditional style the Ruck panel have been celebrating. We're all sitting here with our party hats, we've been pulling our crackers. I've got a joke here from my cracker. It is, if you had four nations together and they were playing a competition and the same winner won every year, what would it be called? The Rugby Championship.
Oh,
what you see, it's a Christmas cracker, isn't it? The joke's going to be shite,
that's
goodness
good.
Sake.
That's good.
No, has anyone
good.
Else got so, a... Sorry, I'm going to introduce the panel now, which is an old tradition we forgot about. some of our favourites you might not have heard from recently. Jonesy, happy Christmas to you. You're looking great. You're in a Christmas sweater. It's your Claremont hoodie again. You were wearing that last week when we were here.
I'm absolutely stuffed, honestly. For dinner. I don't know where the last week went. It seems like 2 minutes ago.
Alan Dimmock back again, our favourite Brig Al, who's I've remembered your surname. Well done.
Well done.
How was your Christmas? All good?
I'm hanging.
Yeah.
I'm hanging.
And JMO, all the way back down from Swansea on Boxing Day. That is a phenomenal effort.
Yeah, no, God. I've got my Christmas sweater on. And I've got to rush off to watch Dragons against Cardiff Blues.
Good man.
Are you coming, Steve?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Good man. So, in a Christmas crackers, anyone got a joke to share?
Well, I've got a good one. Something I read just before Christmas. I looked at an online magazine, and in it said, it gave you a taster for what was in the magazine, and it said like inside, meet the real George Clancy. You said you wanted a joke.
mine only had a new definition of an old Terminator. We described what a dead ball line is. Apparently, it's queuing for the vasectomy clinic.
that's a better Christmas cracker than I got. J-Mo.
I haven't got any jokes. I tell you what I think is a joke in rugby union, though.
Yeah.
The way players are behaving towards referees on the field.
That is a joke.
Totally agree. Yeah. Totally agree.
That is a joke.
That needs to change.
This is a joke. Welsh crowds in Pro 14 games that aren't derbies. That's a joke, isn't it?
Yeah, but look, that's why they have the derbies.
Yeah,
and we're drawing a fine line here because you just made a very important point, and it's just absolutely ridiculous. The referees have got all the ammunition they need, and they should have all the backup. The cacophonous noise and the appealing and all that—they don't need to. Doesn't need to happen.
And the arms up at every ruck.
They're
trying to say that somebody's holding on. I mean.
We're straying towards things that make us the most cross.
No, yeah.
I get cross when someone's kicked the ball out and they're waving to the touch judge as to where they should be taking the line.
No,
I mean, just give the man a break. That's his job.
I mean, these are all things that I used to do as a player.
It's got worse, isn't it?
It's terrible. Yeah. And do you know what? Sometimes referees, they're looking at mauls and they're trying to work out what's happening behind them because everybody comes up offside. And the referee is forced, as the play goes on, to explain to someone who's brought up a point why he made the decision. It's off. It's really ridiculous.
You know what I'd love to see in 2018? Is a winger who obviously hasn't scored a try and it's gone to the TMO. And we know it's not going to be awarded a try. If he just has a word with the ref and says, look, don't waste your time, though. I drop that.
That's a great one.
Why doesn't anybody ever do that?
That's like
walking in cricket. Now. Just say to reflect. Don't waste time. I drop that.
Did you ever walk?
Yeah, all the time.
Did you really?
Yeah,
seriously?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Why wouldn't he do that as a winger? If you know, how does he think it's miraculously going to appear as a try if he's dropped the ball over the line?
But given not out though, Steve? Seriously?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, good for you.
Let's make a pledge on this podcast. We pledge here.
Yeah.
Whoever,
I don't have to give any money, do I?
Who do you think will do it?
Whoever stands up and says, "Ref, I didn't score," we'll give them a Claremont hoodie. We'll give them Steve's Claremont hoodie.
No,
because then you can put that one on expenses.
Seriously, why don't they do that? I never get that. There must be so many players who know they haven't scored. Just say to the ref, look, don't waste time. Let's get on with the game.
We want to be light-hearted here because we need to get back for the cold turkey. But, you know, the game, we all say, oh, good old rugby, the spirit of rugby and all that. Some part of it is not. It's not like that. And no one will, I don't think anyone would ever do that. And there's all the appealing, there's the cheating, etc. Come on, we're not the Archbishops of Canterbury in rugby, I can tell you that.
Okay.
I would love someone to do that.
Steve, this is our cheerful. We've got to get back for the turkey and we're having a laugh.
Sorry, mate.
This is us having fun.
Sorry, was I too serious then?
No, it's fantastic. No. Shall I give you my my Christmas quiz?
Yeah, go on.
You can shout out as you like and when.
Have we got a buzzer?
Question number one. How come Greg Laidlaw became a Lion? Oh, that's not fair at all.
I've got that written. I've got another question that's written out for.
Okay. Quick question. Here's a good question. Who passed the ball to Liam Williams for the greatest Lions drive of all time?
Daly?
No. Okay, it was Anthony Watson. I don't think we need.
I would have got that. We would have got that.
Which of the following did not touch the ball in the process of scoring that try? Anthony Watson, Liam Williams, Elliot Daly, Sean O'Brien, Danny Cipriani, and Jonathan Davis.
Look, that's just me taking a piss.
Steve, you've rewritten the lines of Danny Cipriani scoring the try, haven't you?
Well, he would have done had he been there.
I'll tell you what, Ben Teo didn't touch the ball, but he probably had the most telling contribution to that try when he ran the blocking line.
Intelligence there.
Yes,
okay, here's question number three. Or is it number four? I've lost track anyway. Does Elliot Daly possess any non-white Under Armour? You know his layers. He always has his white arms. Does he own a black Under Armour shirt?
That's a tough one.
I tell you, I haven't got a clue about the answer on that. I don't want to move on.
Apparently, he's a good cricketer, so I've heard.
Only, as we said last week, though, he could be flown out to because he used to be a bowler, according to you, Slotty.
Yeah, no, he's outstanding. He might play. He might miss the England Rugby Tour of South Africa this year because he's playing for the.
Duke of Norfolk's 11?
No, I was going to say for England in the Soccer World Cup. Soccer? Did I really say that? Okay. This is a question I pinched from Brendan Gallagher of the Rugby Paper. How many Fijian wingers will you find in the top 14 in Pro D2?
20.
24?
Higher. Go higher, J-Mo.
Oh, look, she's getting out the rugby paper.
He's rifling through
the paper.
I was reading this earlier, but I can't remember the answer.
What's the answer, Soddy?
The answer's 35. Can you believe it? Sorry, Jamie, it's nearly there.
So that's 28 clubs and there's 35 Fijian wingers.
Yeah.
Absolutely scandalous.
Which of the following did not get capped by England in 2017? Piers Francis, Mark Wilson, Will Collier, Jack Singleton, and Denny Solomona.
Jack Singleton,
yeah.
He was sub, he didn't come on.
Tell you what a panel we've got here.
Oh, I didn't know.
Do you know what? I just thought of a better player than Piers Francis, Piers Morgan.
This is a theme that's going to run and run. This starts off as a proper question, but then we can talk about it subjectively afterwards. Which was the bigger of four major thrashings? Four major thrashings in 2017: New Zealand against South Africa, Ireland against South Africa, Clermont versus Saracens, or Saracens versus Northampton. Four massive score lines. Which is the biggest one?
Biggest. One was
points wise.
Sarri's Northampton.
Sarri's Northampton.
New Zealand, South Africa, wasn't it?
It was New Zealand, South Africa. 57-0. Yeah. Saracens Northampton was 55-24. Ireland, South Africa 38-3, and Clermont Saracens was 14-46. And subjectively, okay, there's no right answer to this. Which was the biggest one in terms of what it did, what it meant, and the biggest surprise?
Well, the biggest one for me was the South African one, because I've grown up with those two teams banging seven bells of hell out of each other. I saw the first time South Africa ever lost a series against New Zealand in South Africa. I was there, and it was just two teams of gods. And for one team to have slipped so far out that they're hardly a B team now for South Africa, for New Zealand, is criminal, is awful.
What was that tour like?
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Okay, so I've got a very timely point you make there, Steve, because I have a riddle from my cracker here. I'm just going to read it out to you now. If South Africa keeps losing players due to politics of race and foreign rugby economies taking their players, can they ever be a force again? Sorry, how can they ever be a force again? This is a riddle.
Well, they can't.
They can't. They can't. When you've got over 100... how many is it, Al?
It's 232.
No, it's 350 plus. Yeah.
Well, but when you've got that number of players, I mean, many of whom would have been in contention, you just can't. You just cannot do it.
Watching South Africa this autumn was quite sad, wasn't it? I
thought. Oh, awful.
Yeah. Yeah. They had 373 players playing abroad in the last year.
But, you know, that's actually not a new thing. For South Africa, they have lost. Apart, I mean, it's the sheer volume, but they have lost a number of players abroad before. It's just the way that it's panning out now. But I think that's not the most important thing. It's the fact that the rugby public's will is almost broken. Yeah. In South Africa,
it is sad. It is sad.
But okay. Listen, there's Regulation 9, which I think should be used both ways. It should be used to stop people having games outside the window. But, you know, Vincent Kok, for instance, Sarri's magnificent tight end prop, South Africa getting pushed all over the field. You've got to bring back the players that you can.
England have got four next year, haven't they? They're playing four next year, England?
Yeah.
I think, on a serious point, I think one hope is that Razi Erasmus has gone back and he's making it part of his... ambition is to bring players like Kok home, so he has to find some money for them, which is where it all starts.
And also another good one is that Argentina are now seriously thinking of that they've got to use all their players for the World Cup.
That's an original thought, isn't it?
Well, it is.
Yeah, let's go and take our best players to the World Cup.
But the thing is, at least they are all Argentinian, so that, you know, the goodness sake, don't just have half your team, get them all there.
Can I take you back to my quiz? I've got a couple of really good questions left.
Right.
Okay.
You spent a lot of time on this, didn't you?
I did.
Very good.
All day yesterday, Christmas Day, were you doing this?
Yeah. I had a few family problems. I just tucked myself away. And...
Sorry. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact... You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story. The Times daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Lions was tied 1-1 after the first two tests. Mm. Do you know anyone who predicted a draw in the third test?
No. He's gloating already, isn't he?
Look at him.
He's dribbling all over his Christmas sweater.
There's one man in this panel who's got his arms up in the air. Let's move on to the next question.
What were the odds?
This will be one of those ones, like in a newspaper, where the answers at the back of the newspaper upside down. We'll go back to that at the end, shall we?
Yeah.
Okay, this final question, my cunning quiz, is can you name which of the following was not a member of the Geography Six? Thomas Francis, Corrie Hill, Gareth Davis, Finn Russell, Alan Dell and Danny Cipriani.
I'm not going to react to this funny, pathetic further undermining of a great player and a nice guy.
Okay, I did actually mention five of the six. Can you off the top of your head?
Daisy?
No, he said Corey Hill.
Daisy. Yeah. Right, well done, Steve. Well done, Steve.
Yeah. I wasn't listening.
Okay, moving on fast. We're going to go on to our player of the year. Or no, we didn't say player of the year, person of the year. You can pick anyone from the rugby, a whole rugby world that brightened the year for you. Who wants to go first?
Jonathan Davis, player of the series in the Lions. Had a shocker against England, basically handed England the game, didn't he, to recover from that. Yeah. And he's a top bloke, isn't he? So right. Unassuming top bloke.
Well, I have a list of favourites. players from my lifetime. And I'll read you who's already in the Hall of Fame.
I think you might be able to talking this year.
But you might be able to spot a theme because there are inductees into the Hall of Fame for this year. So I'll tell you who's already there: Andrea Lochicero, Alan Chunk Jacobson, David Zirakashvili, and Martin Madden.
Martin Madden.
So I can tell you that
Dimitri Arhip's going to get in there.
Did you play, by the way, Al?
Yeah, Dimitri Arhip's in there.
Is he coming in? Yeah.
Dimitri Arhip's already in there. Okay. But two additions: Juan Figueroa, because I just love the way he goes about his business. And Rob Evans, what a season he's having. You know, they're both in there.
Good viewers.
I'm going to mention him later.
Slotty, can I just go a little bit sports wide rather than rugby wide?
No.
Oh,
I kind of want to. Sorry, some
Jenny
heroes.
Said no.
Well, I've got two heroes. Obviously Harry got 18,000 votes.
Prince Harry.
Prince Harry Kane. Yeah, because he's just
Harry Williams,
a wizard.
Though,
wizard and Harry Williams. Yeah. And also, my final non-rugby player is a guy who I think was almost my highlight before the Lions, was Sergio Garcia, who I've followed for years, thought he would never win a Masters. And for him to win a Masters, I just absolutely loved it. I'd rather him win the Masters than me. Mm.
And then he popped up at the end of that move to score the Lions try.
He did, yeah, outside Danny. Yeah. But Jonathan Davis would be really well up there. I also love Tadhg Furlong. He's a great player. And just two more. One, Matt Banahan, scandalously fallen out with Bath, but what an unbelievable player, an underrated player. And also Sarah Hunter, who captained England to the World Cup final. Won a 100th cap. He's like a beast on the field, but absolutely wonderful, measured and charming off the field. So
hell of a coach as well.
One of my heroines there. We've got loads because rugby's like that.
Okay, I'm going to mention mine. I don't know the name of this person, but whoever on Facebook starts up the Facebook page Adopt a Lion Fan. And seriously, during the Lions, as we know, there were like 20,000 Brits travelling around. Yeah. And this was the most fabulous thing for relationships between the two countries. And we talked a lot during the Lions tour about Kiwi fans and Kiwi rugby fans. Were they arrogant? Were they nice? Or whatever. But the hospitality shown by your average Kiwi to let British fans come in, share their homes, share their meals, share their bathrooms, was absolutely astonishing. And I spoke to some of the fans about this, and I found it quite moving. So there we are.
That very good. Can I just have one more? Have you got a book of the year? Because book has been.
How many of us around this table have a book out this year before
no,
you?
Not written by us.
That was last year.
But on the Lions tour,
I haven't got my copy yet.
On the Lions tour, every week we mentioned the New Zealand Herald's Shaggy McGuinness. what was his real name? Jock McFrock. Yeah. Now Jock McHaggis, staggeringly, has brought a book out.
Has he?
Yeah. Now what a load of utter pants and drivel.
Have you read it?
Have I read it?
Well, you just assume.
No, I just know. Well, we just know from everything he's ever written, it'll be utter pants and drivel.
What's it called? Favourite clowns of my lifetime.
Oh, God. So, anyway, good old New Zealand Herald's Jock McFrock. And no, we won't be buying your book or giving you your real name because some poor sod might buy it by accident.
It's terrific to bring him back onto the podcast. Well, come back.
He's been a real character.
He was on there every week. He was on every week. But there we go. He was beyond parody in the end. We had to stop.
Most influential person in world rugby in 2017?
Well, I've got an answer for this. The head barmaid who decided not to throw me out of Cowboys Pub in Queenstown. She talked to the security staff down.
How did that change rugby?
How did that change rugby? Well, it changed my life in rugby. I would have been pretty cold and outside. And actually, I'd have to give a special mention to journalist Chris Foy, who rallied the troops around me to stop them from throwing me out. That was a special moment.
That's going to be hard to top that one, isn't it?
Go quite seriously. I'd go for Doddy Weir. Because I think it's a, you know, such a sad story. But I think the way the world of rugby has reacted to that shows the game at its very best.
Very nice.
Quite agree with that one, Steve. Mine would be, as a group, the executives of World Rugby, who made a brilliant attempt to ultimate failure to make the World Cup process transparent. They were failed in the end, but they had a really good go, and I genuinely applaud them for that. My man of the year is Warren Gatland. The way that people have seemed to have forgotten, A, that the Lions Tour ever existed, B, that it was an absolute tragedy in terms of preparation, C, that they drew with what was before and after a great All Black team. So why should we say it wasn't a great All Black team when they went down there? That was the coaching feat of the era for me by a distance. I know afterwards that Wales were slaughtered in the autumn. That's irrelevant. Warren Gatland put the Lions back on the map and kept them there against a great side with a magnificent coaching achievement. And I would couple his name with that of Sam Warburton. Just over a week ago, we had the Sports Personnel of the Year Awards. For Sam Warburton not to be anywhere in that ridiculous list was absolutely preposterous, because he will go down as one of the quietest but greatest men that rugby's ever produced. So the Warren and Sam for you.
My most influential person in World Rugby, I have three, one of them which is Warren Gatland, who you mentioned. Two, Moad Altred, which you kind of mentioned, because he's a Frenchman who kind of bought the World Cup for France, the hosting rights of 2023, away from the process. So he effectively busted the process. And third, this is trying to be clever, but Sonny Bill Williams. If he'd not been playing in the second test, where would we be? We would have probably lost. Sorry, the Lions would have probably lost. And we've gone to Auckland 2-0 down, and we wouldn't have had so much fun. Now we're moving on to the Lions squad. We spent the first half of 2017 talking about who should be in the Lions squad, and now at the end of 2017 we're going to play retrospective selection. You're allowed to select one player who should have gone, who didn't, and one player who did, who did go, who shouldn't.
I genuinely believe now that if you had taken Ali Price, the Scotland scrum half, instead of Greg Laidlaw, the Scotland scrum half, you would have had a much better tour with Ali Price instead of Greg Laidlaw, personally.
I can't disagree remotely.
Someone who's mentioned earlier, Rob Evans, he's been a revelation, I think, as a loose-head prop who can handle in the wide area. It's been outstanding.
He's as close to Mako, I think, as there is, in terms of your modern scrummaging and handing forward. But you're saying you think it's better than Mako than
Opponent. Yeah.
Mine would be in the same position. I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't have picked it myself, because I would. But I thought Joe Marler, for a really boisterous and attacking prop, was really, really quiet on the trip. Whether he was holding something back because he was injured, I don't know. But I thought Joe would really grow massively into the jersey, and I don't think he did. I don't think he's a bad player at all, but I was expecting a heck of a lot from him. Otherwise, I'd say Ali Price is a good one, but I think Gareth Davis would be absolutely in his element out there with Dan Bigger at halfback instead of Laidlaw. But there we go. And I have to say, on another note, it was one of the best selected teams there's been, because usually there's about 10 who had a nightmare tour, and this time they weren't.
George Cruz is an interesting case, isn't he? But how he's sort of...
No, you're right. Because
got picked. Yeah, everyone said he's a certainty for that first test. But, you know, played in that.
And
first
how vocal
test.
He was. Everyone spoke about his leadership skills and set piece.
Just nosedived, didn't
good
he?
Point
from there.
Good point.
They definitely should have replaced the 4x4s that carried them up before that first game when they all had back problems. Remember that?
But at the time, I suppose this is why we can say this now. At the time, no one picked out George Crewe and went, why is he there? Mm.
I thought it was a well selected squad, wasn't it?
I thought it was, a very well selected squad.
Too many problems.
I think these days they love, especially when you've got no time to prepare, they love a great organiser. And I think that's why they chose him. But I don't think he was quite himself as a player out there. But look, I tell you what, it was just a magnificent trip, as all Lions trips are. Yeah. Towards the end of the tour, John Spencer, the manager, took us all into a room and he gave us lock, stock and barrel of what he was going to do. I'm going to change this, I'm going to change that, I'm going to change the other, we're going to have better preparation, more fixture, blah, blah, blah. None of that happened. And one day we look back in 100 years' time when the Lions could have won a lot of these tours and they didn't win any of them, and we'll get the full feeling of regret.
Talking point, at the time leading up to that second test in particular, there was a lot of conversation as does the Lions' entire future as a concept hang on this test. Was that the biggest load of bollocks that the British media has ever cooked up? And I like to think that the Times and the Sunday Times did not touch that.
British and Irish media, you should say.
Yeah. Well, and actually the Kiwi as well. The Kiwi media was full of got to win this one.
When you say the biggest load of bollocks that the British media's ever cooked up, there's some contenders there.
What was the argument there? I mean, I just don't get that. The Lions have won their previous series as well.
Well, there was a suggestion that the Lions' credibility was under threat because they might go down 2-0 or 3-0.
To a great New Zealand side.
Yeah. on the Lions tour, when the final whistle blew after the third test and this wonderful raucous stadium suddenly went weirdly quiet. I mean, it was a very strange silence, and that's because no one knew what to make of the draw at the time. And in modern sport, we're totally attuned to seeing the victor and the loser, and that's all part of the drama. I didn't write it strongly enough at the time, but as time has gone on, I've liked the draw more and more. I liked the romance of the fact that these two teams could go at each other for three weekends in a row and still couldn't be separated. Do people agree?
Yeah, totally agree. I thought so at the time. But Lions is different, isn't it? It's unique in that.
It is different.
I just emphasise that point, though.
And if you carried on into extra time and someone had made a mistake and a three-pointer was kicked to settle it, it just sort of felt cheap. And I didn't think it
was, I thought it was brilliant.
I'm glad you agree.
Actually, at the start of this, we talked about things that we'd like to change in 2018. Can we get rid of the phrase, like kissing your sister, when people talk about draws?
Oh, yeah.
It's exactly. Just the worst. Terrible.
I thought one of the great moments in sport after that third Lions test, when the two teams had that photo taken together.
Some
people have said that's a bit corny, but I thought that was brilliant. I mean, how often do you see that in other sports?
No, I thought it was
also that there was a definite sense of relief out there with the Kiwis.
Oh, yeah.
I know they want to win, but actually there was a big relief, and I think they would have taken the draw 5 minutes before the end because they thought the Lions played them to a standstill. They didn't have any of their attacking game. Bowden Barrett was in a little cage for the whole series.
I thought that 20 minutes after half time, when what's the name got Simbin. I mean, the All Blacks went to pieces there.
Yeah, they did.
I've never seen an All Black side so rattled as that 20 minutes.
I can understand the quiet, though, because there was a sense everywhere, and I'm sure it was the same for the players as it was for a lot of the fans. It was almost that sense of, we did it. We survived. This savage experience.
But it was also partly we did it, we survived, and it was also people looking at each other going, what happens next? You know, is there extra time?
No, but it was the same for the players as well, and they must have, like, that relief that Steve talked about there. The players must have that, all of the players on both sides must have that enormous sense of relief.
What about Ken Owens? Imagine how he was feeling.
Well, the penalty that was called against him that was retracted.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought one of the great parts of the denouement of that whole series was the fact that Steve Hansen came to the press conference afterwards and he could have said we should have won that because the referee gave us the penalty and then retracted it. But he did behave with considerable dignity there and that was stuck with me as well.
There was some good work by Sam Warburton there.
As Steve said, when the whistle went, people looking around, and I think it was Nick Kane said to me, or whoever was sitting next to me, said, oh, God, you know, that was a... And I said, forget it. Great result. Forget it. And it was a great result, and they were a magnificent team.
And it was fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
And that's more important than anything else.
It was fun.
Well, thank you, gents, for taking time out on precious family day today to share all that stuff with us. We're going to wrap up now with just one final round. What was a highlight, your highlight of the Rugby World 2017?
Can I have a personal highlight first? It was very, very briefly that in conjunction with the RPA, I did interviewed 8 or 9 players who had suffered severely from the transition of playing to not playing, and in terms of depression, in one case suicidal thoughts, and I really enjoyed working on that with the likes of Danielle Waterman, John Okito, Big Duncan Bell, those people. Really loved working on that. And I also loved the two matches a couple of weeks ago between Bath and Toulon. A, because it's always an honour to go to watch a French club rugby team over there, and I went over there, and the return, both were magnificent games, stripped away all the pompous pretense of international rugby with the silly anthems, the roaring announcers, etc., etc. I just think those games were club rugby at international standard and club rugby at its best, and I'll gave me a warm glow going into the new year in a few days' time.
An interview I did in October where I went to the Ospreys training base at BP Landarcy and I interviewed their hooker, Scott Baldwin.
Oh, yes. Was that the world exclusive, wasn't it?
About being bitten by a lion.
That's brilliant.
It's something I never thought I'd do and I probably won't do again. But I mean, fair play to him. He was brilliant about it, and he's very brave to speak publicly about it. But
yeah,
you know,
I do well,
to
yeah.
go into the great detail he did about how it happened
was probably the rugby story that got more traction
yeah.
outside rugby than anything.
Incredible.
For me, professionally, very fortunate this year to have been allowed to do two investigations for the magazine, one into player migration, and the other one into the use and abuse of painkillers, and to speak to a lot of people who are struggling with the effects of that and telling people about the risks of that. But just from a purely love of rugby point of view, to be in that stadium for the second test for the Lions when they won in Wellington, I've never worked at or been a fan at a game that has ever had an atmosphere like that, and it was fantastic.
Totally agree. And the fans are just magnificent, and they continue to be.
Totally agree too.
Also, can I just have one more thing as well? That there's a serious point that we're all four journalists in our nice warm offices on Boxing Day, but what about all our colleagues are out and about in harm's way in positions of danger? And I think there were 27 journalistic deaths at trouble spots this year, so let's hope all our colleagues keep safe.
Here we are.
Thank you for that, Steve. I'd just like to share my highlight is the 6 weeks in New Zealand were spectacular spectacular place to be a journalist. Extremely hard working at the same time, and I think it was in Christchurch after a week and a half that Steve Jones lost one of his shoes, and that can be quite distressing. And I think Steve just held it together magnificently through that time. He showed incredible fortitude. We went from Christchurch down to Dunedin, didn't we? And the shoe was mailed on to Dunedin, but just tragically, it arrived the day after we left to go up to Rotorua. Still, Steve kept it together again. The edition of the Sunday Times that weekend was just phenomenal. And then we went from Rotorua to Hamilton, didn't we? And did the shoe arrive at Rotorua the day after we left?
Yeah, it did.
I mean, it was incredible. This guy just kept on going, just bumping out this phenomenal prose for the Sunday Times readers. And when were you reunited with the shoe?
It was towards the end of Hamilton. By that time, I bought a pair of used Wellingtons because I take size 15, and there's not many of those about in New Zealand. And people didn't notice for 3 weeks. I went round with a brand new, almost brand new, brown shoe and one of my Daps.
Yeah, but there was a couple of days when you were just literally hopping around. Wasn't
I was
there?
Hopping around. I was hopping. Absolutely ridiculous.
Amazing performance.
And I could not find a pair of anything above size 12s out there. It was tip of the Kiwis.
And in your modesty, you just kept on going without complaining, didn't you?
No, I did complain a bit.
and on that bombshell, we shall leave you for 2017. J-Mo and Al and Steve, thanks very much. Thank you, all our listeners out there. I inevitably will be back in 2018. This is The Ruck. Thank you very much.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets, featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. this Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.